Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today, we're speaking with guest expert Natalia Pardo Villaveses. Natalia is an associate professor at the University of Los Andes, where she is the head of the geoscience department. Her research focuses on physical volcanology based on tephra field mapping, stratigraphy, and sedimentology to reconstruct past explosive eruptions. She also works in the development of workshops bridging Western science and indigenous knowledge to mitigate volcanic risk. Let's hear what she has to say about the Nevado del Ruiz eruption and the Armero tragedy. Hi, Natalia. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Rebecca. Thanks for your invitation.
Well, I was hoping that you could start off by giving us some context about the town of Armero. Where is it located and what are some of its specific attributes? And was there a specific reason the town was settled at the foot of the volcano?
Okay, so Armero, it's placed in a very interesting geological situation and geographical location in the country. Is right in the middle and in the Magdalena River Valley. So the Magdalena River Valley is one of the main rivers flowing from south to north Colombia. And so it runs parallel to two of the mountain ranges that we have here, which are the Central Cordillera and the Eastern Cordillera. Armero was exactly placed on the foothill of the Central Cordillera. So it was placed in the low part of the valley, just when the mountain ranges end. And so all the rivers coming from the volcanoes try to go to the Magdalena River. That's their path. And Armero was exactly where one of the main rivers, Lagunilla, ends its canyoning. Like it is first canyoned and then it opens and outflows and discharges all its energy into the main depositional region, which is where where it wants to rest and flow into the main Magdalena River Valley. But besides being in that dangerous, risky situation, it's also like a region perfect for crops especially back then it was cotton, and it's a perfect region to grow food. So it's a perfect place. It's flat. Also, it's easy to build. It's really close to the water resources. So most of the initial economy of Colombia, actually after the colonization, was developed along the Magdalena River, along that floodplain.
Oh, so it has a history of being inhabited.
Yeah.
Now, just months before the eruption occurred in November of 1985, experts were ringing the alarms about the potential dangers that this town faced. What were they concerned about? What did they know that perhaps the residents and the local officials didn't?
So one important thing maybe I forgot to say is that it's far distant from Nevado del Ruiz. And so back then, and when you don't know, when inhabitants don't follow, and not only inhabitants, like all the planning of towns and cities and inhabited places in a country do not take into account the geographical connection between sources like volcanoes and how they connect, the rivers connect those sources with other valleys and main rivers. So if you don't see the mountain, you don't feel the connection with the mountain. So that was something that geologists already saw, because that's our job. We see the geography, the landscape, and we look for rivers connecting volcanoes with the positional sites. And so they got stressed because it was something that anyone interested in geography could see, the connection between Nevado del Ruiz along those rivers towards the Magdalena Valley, and starting to notice that they were alluvial fans. Those things are like a specific geomorphological features that we, geomorphology means that the landscape has a fan-shaped geometry, and that is very typical where the rivers like kind of throw up, right? So, and so the town was located or was growing on top of that region. The other thing that they started to notice, well, originally actually there were climbers, people hiking the mountain, who first noticed that there was something odd. There was a sulfur smells, there were yellowish colors on the snow. Back then it had lots of snow. There was a chalet. People, we don't ski in Colombia, but back then that was the only place where it was kind of possible.
Oh, wow. And
so people who used to hike, they were actually the ones who noticed something was wrong. And they started to communicate. And the first scientist started to tried to go up, but it was really difficult at the moment. And when they could finally go and see, they started to notice that there were mud pools, like boiling mud in some of the scenery was changing. So those kind of physical changes in the environment start to be worrying. And then they started to call for help, international help of Ecuador, had already volcanologists around. The Italian government sent the volcanologist here, also people from Switzerland. And so they already started to build up a technical team, and universities in Colombia started to do the main geological observations, as well as the geologists working back then in Ingeominas, which was the geological survey at the moment, and that they then started to check the connection of the river, but also to see that there were dangerous processes recorded in the stratigraphical record of the region. That, what does it mean? It means that really mass movements, what we call mud flows, or technically speaking, lahars, had occurred in the past. And now we know that what happened to our meadow has happened there many times before. So it's been like a recurrent process of the volcano during many years. So one worrying thing is that in 100 years, you lose the social memory of what has happened. And if you lose the social memory, then the risk level increases. So all of these things were worrying, actually. And they started to do what we call the hazard map, which means you start to identify those places that have been affected in the geological past by volcanic processes. And they identified these lahar deposits in the past underneath Armero, and not only there. Wherever the rivers flow into the Magdalena River, they had those like traces of past lahars, where you see past in geology, it means that it can happen again.
Can you give our listeners a little refresher on what a lahar is and its potential destruction?
So a lahar is, let me pick the proper words. It's a mud flow. So it means that it's a mass movement. It's something that, it's a flow that goes controlled by gravity from higher mountain regions towards low lands. And it's a mixture of volcanic particles. Like it doesn't actually have to, you don't need an eruption to produce a lahar. You just need to have available volcanic sediments around, just like those particles in the region, and lots of water available. So that mixture of water, and it could be a dam, it could be a crater lake, it could be lots of rain, it could be also what happened in Armero, there was an eruption that melted the glacier, and then you have that water available. As soon as you have water available, loose volcanic particles, and a slope, that's the perfect combination you need to produce this mixture that is really thick, really fast in this case, because the difference in height is huge, like from the top of the mountain towards the valley. The top of the mountain is above 4,000 meters above sea level, whereas the lowland in Magdalena is around 500 meters. Mm. So it's lots of difference there. So gravity wins, and that mixture it's that thick that is available to take even cars on top, like to lift houses, to destroy houses, to lift rocks that are above meters in diameter, like really viscous. It's a really viscous flow, and when it stops, it behaves like concrete.
Wow.
And so it's not that it's hot, but it's too thick, and it kind of blocks all the particles together really, really fast.
Now, at the time, what were some of the recommendations that scientists had to ensure the safety of the town? Do you think that these safety measures could have helped?
So that is the part that is confusing, and there are many versions. But the main important thing is that the scientists noticed that there were little earthquakes happening, and that's an important situation. And also, they produced what they called back then the risk map, which today we call the hazard map. So it means that is. They identified the region that could be affected by these processes. So even if you're far away from the volcano, lahars can reach there, because if there's a river connecting a glaciated volcano with the Magdalena Valley. And they identified the Armero region as a really hazardous area. And they communicated this map, which is a 2D graphic production that back then was the work that, they had to do. And they gave that to the authorities 1 month before the eruption. Oh, what's the main problem? As I know from what I've listened, is that the work with the community, the communication, the involvement of participatory processes in developing response plans, evacuation plans, the main social activities that now we know that we have to do, were not done. The only communication was towards the authorities. And then the authorities then, there was like a very confusing miscommunication between all the stakeholders. That's the risky part. Mm-hmm. That you have scientists just as one piece of the information, but there were lots of media around giving another information. There were, for instance, in the newspapers, some news that were, the titles were that the hazard map that was produced back then was causing economical problems with the real estate, with the cost of the land, with and so actually there was non-efficient communication with media, with the community, especially people were left in the last part of the lane, in terms of decision making. So now, from that tragedy, there was a huge lesson with volcanic risk communication, and now we know that the community has to be involved since the beginning.
Wow!
So that was learned there.
Yeah. Could you walk us through the timeline of the events that occurred that day in November of 1985?
The 11th of September, they had an ash emission. So there was ash coming out from this crater that no one noticed before. So Arenas crater. So there was ash emitted to the atmosphere, lots of sulfur and other chemical compounds that you can notice. And there was a little explosion.
Wow.
At like around 1:30 p.m. Then at 6 p.m., that 11th of September, there was an important emission. And then they noticed something that they called back then an avalanche. Now we know that is one of those little lahars along one of the rivers that is called Azufrado River. Azufrado means sulfured, like a name that already tells you that, like, you know, like peasants, campesinos, local people don't use arbitrary names to name rivers.
Right.
You know? And so, okay, there was this little lahar that a half an hour later interrupted one of the main roads that connected towns around the volcano. So that was the 11th of September. Then the 13th of September, there were additional noises related to probably like the gravitational failure of rocks, like there were slumps or pieces of the glacier that were breaking, you know, these surface movements. And then they started to call for meetings, you know, with the local majors and the people involved. But the people from the region of Tolima, which is the one where Armero is located, didn't go. So that is one of the things
Wow.
that that is also important in this case, that you see the volcano from Manizales. That region is called Caldas, and those people were aware of what was going on. But the Tolima region, where Armero is located, is so far away, and without this social memory of the connection with the volcano, that they said we're just too far away. We're not interested in this. This is not related to us. So they didn't go. The 19th of September is where they released what they call back then the risk map. And it was released with the United Nations help as well, but it was lots of Colombian geologists working. And if you see that map today and you compare it with the actual, to the current hazard map, which now is done with all the computer modeling and lots of data and all the science that you want, it's improved, but it's basically showing the same thing that they noticed only by doing field geology back then.
Wow. So and they knew. So
they knew. And then they identified Armero, and not only Armero, also Onda, Mariquí, Tambalema. So all these towns located on the lowlands, where these towns were close to rivers connected to the volcano. That's the first thing they noticed. And a few days later, so the 13th of November is the Saturday. So the 13th of November at 3 p.m., there were lots of noises reported close to a river that is called Huali. So there are many, many campesinos living there. As I said, these are families which are super connected to the what they grow, no, or to the cows and their animals, or with the growing crops. So they notice these noises close to this Huali River, and then they notice the first ash emission, and this ash actually fell down in Armero at 5 p.m. So you need time from the ash moving with the wind, actually in a wind direction that is not too common in Colombia. Usually here the wind blows towards the west, but in this case, there was wind blowing also towards the east. And then you need time for these little particles to go with the wind and finally fall down like raining. Ash raining in Armero 2 hours later. At 7 p.m., then the Red Cross started to call the evacuation of Armero. At 9 p.m., there was an explosion and lahars producing along these rivers, the Azufral, Huali, another one that is also called Molinos, Chinchina, that is not mentioned, but there were many, many problems there as well. And the main responsible one in this case that is called Lagunilla. So the lahars started to produce at 9 p.m. At 9:30, there were reports by the civil defense of Caldas, the other region where Manizales is located. There were some radio stations reporting what was going on, things on TV. But at 9:30 and 9:50, basically, there was a major pulse. And only until 10 p.m., the mayor of Mariquita, which is a town located close to Armero, reacted. So too slow.
Wow, too so slow.
At 10:40, the first lahar reached Chinchina, where there were many casualties there as well. And at 11:35 p.m., the lahar reached Armero. So if you see the eruption was between 9:30 and 9:50, and so there were almost 2 hours before Armero got impact. And so it was just too slow. So this is what is reported. Now, what you hear from the people, from survivals, is that it was so confusing that they didn't know what to do, who to believe. There was lots of information. If I'm not wrong, there was a problem with electricity at some stage. There was only one radio station that was, there was a priest in charge, but this priest was very far away from the region, so he couldn't see what was already going on. And the main messages were to calm down, not to panic and things like that. And so basically the decision was in the community, but with a community that was not prepared because they were left behind the communications and the preparations. And so the ones who understood quickly that it was the volcano, that the noises were the rivers, that there were these rocks coming somewhere from somewhere, and that they were actually understanding that that was a lowland, they took the decision to move to a little hill, that it was not too far away, and it was really possible to evacuate there. So the tragedy didn't have to happen. The evacuation was perfectly possible. There were two hours available to do it. But this thing of not knowing what to do, not having a clear communication. And eventually, one of my colleagues who is one of the survivors, she was a student and back then. So now there was a situation that is also very, very sad, that there were geology students that night in El Meadow, even if in the universities they already knew that it was a very dangerous place, and they slept that night there. And she said that they were in the little hotel, they climbed to the last floor, and when she realized, then she felt this wave, like she saw a wave, and that's the last thing that she remembers. So it was a really violent flow. But the sad part of this tragedy is that now, with the knowledge that we have now, probably, it was not needed. Like it is something that you know it's perfectly understood that the river will bring those things to you.
Yes, absolutely avoidable tragedy.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time, but we like to ask all of our guest experts this question. At the end of the day, if you were to pick a person or a thing, it could be a concept that you think is to blame for the Armero tragedy caused by the eruption of Nevado del Ruiz, who or what would that be?
Lack of communication, miscommunication. And I would add this lack of participatory process in decision making. That's the basic mistake.
Wow. Thank you so much, Natalia, for helping us understand, sadly, this very avoidable tragedy that should be talked about all the time. I can't believe we didn't know about this. This is an important one.
It's an important one. We've learned in the entire people working with hazard mitigation. It's kind of one of the events that sadly happened, and also sadly taught us lots of things. Like now, the thing is that these things cannot happen again. It's a human-centered tragedy. It's not nature. It's completely avoidable. And the disaster is a social aspect. It's not nature that is disastrous, no, catastrophic.
Thank you so much, Natalia.
You're welcome, and thank you for this opportunity to share.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
So interesting, so detailed, Natalia's explanation of how things happened. And it really gives you the sense, you know, and we talked about this in our episode, but you really get the sense that this was happening for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was plenty of time for everyone to get out. Not just the day of, but I mean, even months before.
Yeah, I was really fascinated by her description of like the 100-year kind of like social history, how every 100 years you kind of lose that memory of what happened, and her emphasis on the fact that it was really a human-centered tragedy, not just like nature, like a fluke nature thing, which we discussed ourselves.
Yeah.
Yes. Nature was not to blame for this one. I agree with you, Clayton. When she was talking about after 100 years, you lose social memory. And if you do, then the risks start coming up.
Yeah.
It turns into risk. I was like, that is, yes, I can. Can we put that on a poster? Mm-hmm. Can I would love a necklace that says with that.
Right. It makes you ask are you 100 years away from that you're not really taking seriously, you know?
Absolutely.
Oh, geez, Clay. Stop that.
I mean, this is what keeps me up at night.
The other thing that spooked me was geomorphology, which is what she discussed. I mean, talk about something else to be really scared about. Just land changing over time.
Yeah.
Well, what we know now, we might not know tomorrow about geology. It's like, I don't know. But I also wanted to give a shout out. I thought it was interesting, and we didn't talk about this on the original episode, was that the hikers who hiked in that area noticed the smell of sulfur and the sort of odd boiling mud or the other details that Natalia mentioned, which then they tipped off the scientists about. So they really got the ball rolling. And from there, obviously not enough was done, but, you know, almost a big clap there for the hikers to have noticed that.
And the fact that they kicked off this investigation, which was led by the electrical company.
Right.
Right.
I mean, it just tells you how it's not that they were unprepared, but it was they were in the beginning of studying this area and this volcano. You know, they hadn't. They, you know, she was talking about how there was the one geologist who had the one machine who would stay up all night because they didn't want to lose any information. You know, it was kind of bare bones.
Yeah. And also, you know, her point, which is, I think, something that she mentioned a couple times, which was that locals were not attending these meetings. Right. Basically, that the new approach here is to get, you know, locals and civilians on board early in these sort of risk assessment situations for volcanoes, particularly.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, you hope that this process gets sort of perfected or at least gets made better by this tragedy. And that's definitely something she enlightened us on.
Now, she did end up blaming the lack of communication, actually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we know that her motive to, you know, Natalia, you know, doing the work she does, she works with the communities to try to mitigate risk.
Mm-hmm.
And that she would have been an incredible asset.
Right.
To the people of Armero at that time. Unfortunately, they didn't have that liaison.
Right.
And that was to their detriment, sadly, because they weren't informed about what to do. And, you know, but the question then that we should ask, I guess, is whose role or whose responsibility is it to make sure that you as a town are informed of all the risks, right? And I still think that that goes to the officials, right?
Right,
sure.
So what do we think here? Because, you know, Natalia made it very clear that this was man-made.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the communication, you know, I think perhaps we slap the communication and we keep those government officials
in jail.
For, yeah.
Yes. We just to remind everyone, we threw the Colombian government in jail. And we did slap the scientists versus politicians.
Right. It wasn't, we weren't slapping the actual scientists. It was
no.
It was the
dynamic, really, I guess.
Yeah. How science can be politicized.
Yes.
You
yes,
know.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, essentially what Natalia was talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in her description of the events, it hit me how, because this was happening for, you know, almost a year before the actual eruption, it, you know, it had officials like evacuated, let's say, a few months when the initial explosion happened in September. You know, the eruption happened in November, but the there were explosions that were happening as early as September. That's why they didn't want to evacuate, because where were you going to house all of those people
right.
for that amount of time? And they didn't want to spend that money. But I say you have to, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to incur the costs that it takes to keep people safe if you're going to allow these towns to just be in the at the foot of a volcano.
Right.
It has to go hand in hand, right?
Yeah.
It's yep. tough. Okay, so I think I'm going to call it. What do you say? We slap the like Natalia said, the lack of communication. And
sure.
we keep the government officials in jail, as since they, I think, bore the responsibility of making sure the communication was better.
Sure.
For the town. Okay.
Now, just to clarify, is it lack of communication? We had poor communication systems on the board, but you want to, we're labeling it lack of communication, as Natalia said? Or is it the systems?
Yes. Lack of communication between the town officials.
Okay.
And the locals. Experts.
And the experts. Yeah,
just making sure that there was a plan. There was no plan.
Right.
And people died because of that. Okay. Lack of communication. You're getting the big slap. Again, it was so great talking to Natalia and learning about this tragedy that we can't forget. We really can't forget. We can't let 100 years go.
Yeah.
And lose this in our social memory, because we already saw it. I had not heard about this tragedy. So, and it's only been, I don't know, I'm really bad at math, but 37 years.
Yeah. It's already happening. We're already losing it. So here we are. Our job is, as the alarmist crew, is to remind people, keep it alive, because it is that.
Yep. A dire. Good reminder to the alarmy to go and re-listen to every other episode we've ever done so that they don't forget all those ones too.
It's a tall.
But
tall
yeah, order. I mean, you know what you can do is tell someone you know about this tragedy and say, hey, you know, oh, you don't know about it? Well, you should look into it. I don't know. Let's talk about it. Let's spread the word a little bit. Well, stay tuned, because next week we're going to be discussing the Hollywood 10.
Earios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.